Welcome to part 6 of the PDH online course on NFPA 72-07, the fire alarm code. Promise to talk to you about hidden notification devices. At least one vendor is offering strobe horns and strobe speakers which fit into a box in the ceiling and drop down when activated. One fire marshal states that he likes them a lot. They're protected from incidental damage and have an excellent operational record in correctional institution. Your author is not recommending these, however, because of 30 years of observation of equipment failures and maintenance practices. A mechanical linkage will be painted shut, become inoperable, and never be fixed. Now, that's not saying there's anything wrong with this feature at all. It just says there is a drawback, and it must be recognized before you undertake it. It happened that when the fire marshal told me about this, I was working with an architect on a real high-profile commercial space, and the architect loved these because, I mean, his entire job is to create a space and a feeling in the space that meets the needs of the owner. And having a red box with a horn on it, and, you know, that doesn't contribute to his design. Whereas having a almost invisible outline where something drops down, it has very little infringement on the conceptual contributions here. And if when it works, it will work. There's no question. When it's new, it will work, and it'll work for a long time afterwards. But it does require some testing, as do all fire alarm systems, and a little special attention, because this painting it shut is not a silly thing. Awful lot of strange things get painted shut that would surprise you. Magnetic door hold opens. When the architect is trying to create a building that meets the needs of the owner and complies with the building codes, he is encouraged to break the space into closed individual compartments. Many construction requirements are relaxed or eliminated if compartments are used. Unfortunately, people do move around. Large corridors violate compartmentalization. A solution is fire doors, which are normally open but close in the event of a fire to create the compartments. The device which normally holds the door open is a magnetic door hold open. Some magnetic door hold opens operate directly off the fire alarm power supply. These things draw like 15 milliamps. You get the idea. Holding a door open sounds like a big deal, but magnetic power is extremely economical. If it is in physical contact, that is, you know, no thousands of an inch separating the magnet and the target plate, 15 milliamps runs these things. And a battery system can supply 15 milliamps without requiring a large wire or anything like that. The device normally holds the door open and lets go when the fire alarm system goes into alarm. Some operate directly off the fire alarm power and alarm circuit. Some require supervised relay and external power. All fail in a door closed condition. That is, they release the door. There is a requirement for magnetic door hold opens to be connected to an area smoke detector on each side, or a dedicated smoke to area smoke detectors on each side, or a dedicated smoke detector on each side. That is, you can use the standard building smoke alarms if the central unit is programmed to trip the door open. But it has to be off those specific sensors on each side of it to trip this door open. You don't wait till the whole building goes into alarm before it goes open. Either one of those on the opposite side lets the door close. Recently, there was a small controversy about wall-mounted detectors for magnetic door hold opens. The requirement is that they be on both sides of the hall. Now, if you're getting the picture on this, that's four detectors, each side of the door and each side of the wall, whereas the ceiling mount just requires two detectors, one on each side. because sometimes the smoke flow stays on one side of the corridor, and if you had the detector wall-mounted on the other side of the corridor, you don't get any. The reasoning was, and this is validated from laboratory tests and computational fluid dynamics, that when there is a flow through the door, because of pressurization of the building, things like that, it can huddle on one side, but when it huddles on one side, there are still wisps enough that go up to the top to trip a ceiling mount alarm. Fire shutters. A fire shutter is the same idea as the magnetic door hold open, except that a motor drives the shutter into the closed position, and there's a lot more to go wrong with a fire shutter. Magnetic door locks. The fire alarm code reads that magnetic door locks must release when the fire alarm operates. There's considerable controversy in the owner and architect community regarding this requirement. A fire alarm system that does not go directly into evacuation alarm is one solution. There are special code sections and interpretations for prisons, hospitals, public housing, and museums. Interface devices and supervision. A supervised remote relay refers to a device that has been UL tested and labeled for use with a particular fire alarm system. It can be an input, as in picking up the operation of the kitchen hood fire suppression system, or an output, turning on the outside bell or strobe. Supervision means that a malfunction will trip a trouble circuit and a flashing yellow light at the fire alarm console. Modern supervised remote relays have a selectable address and are connected to a digital fire alarm circuit. Formerly, alarm and trouble wire had to be run to the fire alarm panel. Now it's all part of the digital system. Supervised remote relays are available in banks of eight to accommodate multiple connections, as for elevator control. It's generally not permitted or economical to provide digital communication between systems, as between the elevator and between the fire alarm. Similarly, you don't connect the building automation to the fire alarm by digital communication. You connect them by discrete wires with relays and inputs, just like we did 50 years ago. And we may get a little chance to talk about this when we talk about building automation systems. The sprinkler system interface. The supervised flow control valve for a sprinkler system was discussed briefly in the section on zones. Now, those words went by real fast. It's a control valve because you manually shut off the sprinkler system. That's the control about it. It's not the fire alarms controlling it. The supervised part of it is we know that it's off, full, open. The three parts of the valve monitor for a sprinkler valve. Flow, tamper, and trouble. Flow is usually a sales switch in the sprinkler line. It must operate when a single sprinkler head draws rated flow. It must survive the entire zone of sprinkler heads operating simultaneously. The output is an alarm and normally programmed for building evacuation. Tamper switch is another life safety monitor. When the sprinkler system is being worked on, the valve is shut off. It's usually chained and locked, so it cannot be shut off accidentally. When the valve is off, the sprinklers are inoperative, and the building and occupants are at risk. The tamper switch sends a signal to the fire alarm control unit anytime the valve is not in the full open position. It's usually a trouble signal. The reason for the reduced priority is that the valve may be shut off for hours or days during maintenance. A fire alarm control panel is not permitted to have a continuing alarm without going into alarm. True trouble refers to a malfunction of the circuitry of the remote supervised relay. If the relay is disconnected, it is not known whether the sprinkler is in service or out of service. It is known that there's a problem and must be investigated. Elevator interface. The elevator interface to the fire alarm system is not really complicated, but there are many components and forms. The one used must be selected by the architect and mechanical engineer and communicated to the fire alarm specifier and designer. If questions remain, the elevator vendor who is helping the architect should be consulted. A drawing note requiring coordination between the fire alarm contractor and the elevator contractor is strongly recommended. Some general principles are discussed here. Some, but probably not all, will apply to a particular project. elevator lobby smoke detectors, machine room smoke detectors, machine room heat detectors, pit smoke detectors, shaft smoke detectors, safe floor recall, alternate floor recall, fire alarm connection to elevator controls, elevator power shunt trip circuit breaker, shutdown supervision, powered smoke damper operation, cab alarm, firefighter service indicator, the red hat. Before the present level of sophistication, the elevator code, that's ASME A17.1, required dedicated alarm systems for elevator lobbies. In the event of a fire, the elevator was forced to return to a safe floor and taken out of service, but available for firefighters. At some point in recent history, dual-contact smoke detectors were used for elevator lobbies, so that the building fire alarm also knew there was a tripped sensor. Evacuation could be selected or some other action. Today, the preferred method is to provide a building fire alarm smoke detector in the elevator lobby and have the fire alarm system tell the elevator controls that there's a problem. Machine room, pit, and elevator shaft smoke detectors are required in some installations and forbidden in other installations. Both the fire inspector and the elevator inspector must approve the installations, so questions should be directed to them. The safe approach is to specify sensors and disable them in software if they're not needed. Machine room and shaft heat detectors are required if sprinkler heads are present. The heat detector is to take the elevator out of service before the sprinkler trips. Elevator power shunt trip is used with machine room heat detectors where sprinklers are present. Again, the recommendation of this course is to consult the architect and mechanical engineer about the requirements and show a generic interface between the fire alarm and elevator controls on the fire alarm riser panel. Direct the fire alarm installer to coordinate with the elevator installer. If confusion remains regarding smoke detectors, heat detectors, powered shaft, louver, include them and find out at final design coordination. Voice notification and public address interface. Requirements for details of a voice notification system are included in the fire alarm code. Requirement for voice notification comes from the local building code. Note that different localities and different inspectors have different interpretations and may or may not require voice notification. For new installations, voice notification simply means replacing a horn driver card in the panel with a digital voice card. In addition to strobe power supplies, speaker amplifiers must be included. Speaker strobes cost about the same as horn strobes. Fire alarm control panel modules cost about the same, but there are more of them. In a large system, providing a speaker amplifier for each zone may require an additional wall cabinet, further increasing the cost and increasing the space required. Using fire alarm speakers for public address is always permitted. The authority having jurisdiction views this connection as improving reliability of the system, since failures will be noted and repaired. The limitation is that the connection must be in a form that will not diminish the fire alarm function. A fire alarm interface module from the fire alarm vendor is the only correct method. The 2007 fire alarm code adds biohazard, chemical hazards, terrorists, weather and natural disaster notification to be permitted use of fire alarm speakers and places their priority above fire alarm notification. Using public address speakers for fire alarm notification requires more attention. Fire alarm equipment uses supervised circuitry and primary and secondary power supplies. Local authorities having jurisdiction have approved the use of stadium public address system as fire alarm notification. Only the authority having jurisdiction can do this. Standalone residential smoke alarms and building evacuation fire alarm interface. Both the requirements and interpretation for residential smoke alarms are changing rapidly. You must check with the local building standards department to determine current needs. A very good system uses a 120 VAC power system and provides link detectors and sounders on each sleeping room, inside each sleeping room, near the kitchen, in the utility room, and any storage room that might provide fuel for a fire. Battery-powered standalone smoke detectors are still adequate for many jurisdictions, but have battery problems and may not arouse a sleeper on the other side of the door. Obviously, they do not notify of a fire in a different part of the dwelling. Note that the fire alarm code requires all residential smoke alarms be replaced 10 years after date of manufacture. Modern high-rise apartments are different from individual homes. The high-rise has a huge amount of concrete separating the floors and separating the apartments. A fire in one kitchen may do damage there, and smoke may be deadly, but damage and hazard even to next-door neighbors is unlikely. Kitchen fires are very common and usually controlled without major damage. With this in mind, the fire alarm code permits connection from the main building to the residential fire alarm, but forbids connection from the residential to the building system. A single apartment kitchen fire should not cause evacuation of the building. The fire alarm control panel and annunciator. There are a few very simple rules for installation of the fire alarm control panel and annunciator. First, put the panel where it will be noticed and available for reset or maintenance. The panel has a yellow light and sounder for trouble. It's important to notice the trouble light and get repairs. When an evacuation alarm occurs, genuine or false, the system must be silenced and reset. The panel is the correct place to survey operational displays and operate the unit. It's legal for a serviceman to lock out a zone or detector which is delivering false alarms. New digital remote annunciators provide limited silence and reset function from the remote location. Language of the code differentiates between false alarms and malfunctions or nuisance alarms. The fire alarm must have a smoke detector over it, that is the fire alarm control unit, or a heat detector if it's in a vapor-laden space. The fire alarm must be fed by a dedicated power circuit. The circuit breaker and the panel must be painted red, locked in the on position by a listed locking device, and labeled fire alarm circuit. The code requires an annunciator at a central location readily available for firefighters. It's permitted to place the main panel near the door and avoid an annunciator entirely. This is not recommended for reasons of security and maintenance. Rather, a remote annunciator should be placed by the door, used most by firefighters. Most communities have their firefighters visit large or important buildings annually to plan where to park their trucks if needed and to be aware of locations of ordinary and special hazards. Your course author recommends a second annunciator in the building maintenance or custodial area where repair persons enter the building or where staff person is dispatched from to determine if the alarm is genuine or false. Let's take a break now and come back in a few minutes. Start talking about central monitoring in underground facilities.